On this episode of Binged, The Queen's Gambit. Based on the novel by Walter Tevis, the Netflix limited series drama The Queen's Gambit is a coming-of-age story that explores the true cost of genius. Abandoned and entrusted to a Kentucky orphanage in the late 1950s, a young Beth Harmon, Anya Taylor-Joy, discovers an astonishing talent for chess while developing an addiction to tranquilizers provided by the state as a sedative for the children. Haunted by her personal demons and fueled by a cocktail of narcotics and obsession, Beth transforms into an impressively skilled and glamorous outcast while determined to conquer the traditional boundaries established in the male-dominated world of competitive chess. The series is directed and written by two-time Academy Award nominee Frank Scott and executive produced by Frank, William Horberg, and Alan Scott, who also co-created the series. The Queen's Gambit stars Anya Taylor-Joy, Marielle Heller, Thomas Brody Sanger, Moses Ingram, Harry Melling, and Bill Camp. Sweet little Alice
Blue. In this first episode of The Queen's Gambit, super solid story arc that definitely had me excited to keep watching the next episodes. Good writing, acting, sound design, set pieces, editing, high production value across the board. Quality series from Netflix. What do you guys think?
Incredible series from Netflix. Thinking back about how we decided to watch this one, we just picked from a random list. I mean, we struck gold. We didn't know that we were after, you know, one of I think it's number one on Netflix right now. We just looked at a list and we thought, hey, let's give this one a go. And I love it. I'm absolutely hooked. We'll get into it. I'm already a few episodes deep, but I really, really love it. Big, what do you think?
Yeah, I thought this series was excellently done. I thought it was extremely clean. There wasn't a lot of scenes, especially in the first episode, that really were like filler. I thought every scene kind of had a special moment, and I think it was significant to the story arc. So really clean, and I thought really well done overall.
On our popcorn scale, where buttered is the top, popped is like a good movie, average would just be a kernel, burnt is bad, and corn is so bad it's good. Where does Queen's Gambit fall on the popcorn scale rating for you guys?
I'm going buttered, boys. Very good series. And especially one thing I think they do really well, especially at the end of episode one, is they hook you. They hook you so well, and you have to fight to put down your device not to watch the second episode. And they actually do that continuing on into the next episode. So I think it was really, really well done.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I think this one is absolutely soaked. It's drowning in buttered. This was by far, I think honestly, it was the best thing that I've watched this year. And in my opinion, you can't ask for a better Netflix original than this. We've seen a lot of different Netflix originals come out that flop. Some are excellent. And I think this is right up there with the best of them.
Yeah, buttered popcorn for sure. I'll always adore it, my sweet
little Alice Blue guy. Spoilers ahead. Stop now and watch this episode's featured Netflix original.
So we cold open with Elizabeth getting woken up in a bathtub with all her clothes on. A strange opening scene that has the viewer intrigued immediately. Kind of just giving you questions, you know, what's going on. We get the title text that pops up on the screen, Paris 1967, gives us our time frame. And then we see that Elizabeth is in a messy hotel room with mini liquor bottles strewn about. The room's in complete disarray. And the viewer is still wondering, like, well, what's happening?
Yeah, we start out with this this hectic scene, as you described. The hotel room's a mess. Obviously, there was some sort of party that went on the night before, and she seems in distress. There's a knock on the door from probably like just someone that worked at the hotel. And we see her kind of rush together an outfit and kind of fix herself up as well as she could. And then she starts to run down to the hotel lobby and kind of like probably the conference room off of that. And we see her approach a man at a table and reach out her hand to shake her hand and say, sorry, I'm late. And they sit down at a chessboard.
Right. And I think this kind of clues in the viewer into Elizabeth's personality. and her place as like a rebel in the chess world, where like the stark contrast from her opponent, like a clean cut man with a nice suit on who was probably there on time, and her who just ran out of her bedroom or her hotel room, took a shot out of a mini whiskey bottle, and then ran down for the chess match.
Well, we also see her. She takes the pills out of the carrying case, and she pops in a couple of those, washes it down with a shot of vodka, and then hustles down. And just basically at this point, all the viewer knows is this is a story about chess, and there is a kind of rebellious woman who is involved in an otherwise very clean-cut chess scene.
So then we flash back to the scene of Elizabeth being orphaned at a young age, where her mother dies in a car crash. We learn that her father's whereabouts is unknown.
The car crash. Do you guys think that was an attempted suicide by her mother? Because I know, and this is getting into later on in the series, but we get some hints, and I can't remember if it's in episode one, but does her father come to the trailer in episode one?
Yes.
Okay, so you get the sense there that the mother's a little bit unstable. She looks like she did her PhD in math at like Cornell, I think. So very smart woman, obviously, but the father leaves the family. Did you guys get that feel, though?
I got the biggest hint from that when at the orphanage where her friend asks her, what was the last thing she remembers before her mother died? And she said, the mother said to the daughter, close your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me kind of, she definitely drove off the road purposefully.
Right.
Yeah, and we start to see a little bit of Beth's personality, because after the accident, when she's on the bridge, she is just stone-faced. She isn't really showing any emotion. She doesn't really show any emotion when she's first ushered into the orphanage as well. And for the first half of this episode, really, we don't get to see much of a developing personality at all.
Okay, so now we arrive at the orphanage and we meet the headmaster, Miss Deerdorf. You guys' impressions of her?
Ugh. Ugh. She was mean. I was scared of her. She was a Cruella de Vil type. She was a Catholic school principal who would put you down in your place. She gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, I got the impression from her that she was running a strict operation there. All the children would you know, kind of stand straight as she walked by and treat her with respect. I didn't get any, you know, as much of an evil vibe that you got, but based on kind of what I've seen so far, it could go either way. Is this going to be, you know, the kind of like oppressive trope that we see in movies with orphanages like this, with like Harry Potter or Matilda, where their new living situation is not great? Is it going to follow that path, or will it kind of break that mold? And who knows, maybe Miss Deerdorf will have a redemption arc sometime later in the series.
Yeah, it jumped out to me immediately that, you know, like many other orphanages we've seen in film and TV, like, this woman immediately gave off like Mrs. Hannigan vibes from Annie, but just more of like the clean-cut Christian orphanage type. And we definitely see that one of the main things throughout this orphanage is going to be, you know, strict discipline and kind of sticking to the status quo, and they kind of make everyone stand in a straight line and all of that kind of thing. So it's very like discipline oriented at this point.
All right, let's cut to the green vitamins. So we have the children waiting in line to get their medicine at the orphanage. What do you guys think of these magic green vitamins? What do you think they were? What's going on with those?
Yeah, so the first time we see this is her first night, or her first day at the orphanage. They line everyone up in the cafeteria and they make them go up, and they have two sets of pills. I think it was a brown pill and a green pill. And we see the first night after she takes that medicine, we start to see her kind of be a little bit distraught and a little bit confused. And at this point in the movie, you're thinking like, wow, it's kind of messed up that they kind of, you know, drug all of these orphans just so that they kind of don't show any personality.
Doesn't she take the first green pill like in the late afternoon? And I think it was Jolene who tells her like, save the green ones for bedtime. Right. I'm misremembering
that? No, you remember correct. And she started tripping a little bit as she was walking down the hallway, and they told her, you take those at bedtime.
Yeah, traditionally they instruct you to take both of them at the same time, and I guess the assumption is that one's probably an upper and one's probably a downer. just so that they can balance these kids out and numb them a little bit. And Jolene kind of says, you know, one of the older girls at the orphanage kind of gives her a little secret tip and is like, look, don't take the green one yet. Save those for nighttime. It'll be a much better experience for you.
We'll talk more about the pills later. So flashback, we get this rapid infusion of backstory and potential foreshadowing that you were talking about earlier, Greg. The scene where Elizabeth's mother, Alice, is speaking with her father. And the father is trying to kind of talk Alice down. She seems to be having some sort of mental break. She's in this trailer in the middle of nowhere. She's burning personal items. There's a bottle of pills that they show. Any thoughts on this scene?
Yeah, this one was kind of sad. So, and you get a little bit more of it too later in the series, but it just kind of strikes you that you feel really bad for Beth. But yeah, I also kind of felt bad for her mother. At first, you don't really know what's going on, but then you realize, okay, maybe her mother, like you said, is suffering some type of mental illness, and it's just, it's more backstory, but it also leads to more questions. So a tough scene, but an interesting one.
Yeah, so I think this shows just a little bit more into what we saw from the first scene where she was on the bridge, or driving the car on the bridge, rather. And it's one of those things where we start to get a little bit more insight bit by bit into the relationship that Beth's mother had with her. And it was clearly, like Greg said, we saw an early flash that she had a high mathematics degree from a prestigious university. And now we see her in a, you know, kind of rundown trailer in the middle of nowhere. So there obviously was some sort of path that led to the downfall of her career. And you start to think at it, or you start to look at it, and now that there's this toxic relationship with a father figure, and it's, you start to look at it like maybe that there was some sort of incident that led to them having the child, and maybe that's what led to the downward spiral.
One thing that gives me more questions, like you said, Greg, is this line from the mother. She says, "Who says she's our daughter?"
Oh, I don't remember that.
So now let's go back to the orphanage. This is where she meets the man in the basement as she goes down to clap erasers, and he's down there playing chess. And this is her first introduction to the game.
Yeah. So, during one of her classes, when they would bring teachers into the orphanage, the teacher noticed immediately that her intelligence level was far above what everyone else was at that point. And I think that, honestly, the teacher might be the most pivotal character. I don't even know if we got her name. She might be the most pivotal character in the story because she's the one that recognizes Beth's intelligence and sends her down to, in the way I saw it, was she sent him down there intentionally to meet up with Mr. Scheibel.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but that would make sense.
Because she was giving a lesson and Beth like wasn't even paying attention. And then she gave them like a quiz or a test or something, and she finished it in like 2 minutes. And that's when the teacher was kind of like, okay, why don't you go down to the basement? And of course, the basement is where Mr. Scheibel was hanging out playing chess.
And so that night, we get Elizabeth in her bed, and we kind of get this, or we get this good use of visual storytelling where we see the image of a chessboard on the ceiling, kind of made in the form of a shadow. And it kind of allows the viewer to get a glimpse into Elizabeth's mind, where, you know, she's a genius, and just by laying eyes on the chessboard, she's already visualizing strategy. They continue to use this idea throughout the first episode, where Elizabeth is basically practicing and improving her chess game in her mind.
Yeah, when she first meets Mr. Scheibel in the basement that first time, she asks him what he's doing. He's sitting at a desk playing chess by himself, and at this point, he doesn't even really explain anything to her. I think he tells her that it's chess, but doesn't explain to her how to play, says that girls don't play chess. And just off of that brief interaction, she was able to then go back at nighttime while she takes the green pill, was able to then visualize the entire chessboard and start to try to figure out in her mind what was going on. And this is literally without even knowing, I don't think at this point she even knew what any of the pieces actually were, but she was able to have those images in her head already.
So then we have Elizabeth with her playing her first chess game against Mr. Scheibel in the basement. She gets mated in three. Second game, she leaves the queen hanging. She has to resign. And then in our third game is when that we see is when Elizabeth takes the advantage and Mr. Scheibel has to resign. So she improved quickly.
Yeah, so I thought this was a really kind of powerful moment in the story because we see her very resistant to give up. And Mr. Scheibel explains that, you know, sometimes in chess, it's more about respect than dragging things on. And if you know that you're inevitably going to lose, then you're supposed to resign and hand the game over to your opponent. And I think that this shows two things to me. Number one, it shows that Mr. Scheibel is obviously a terrific overall teacher in teaching not only instruction, but also like the respect of the game and that type of thing. And he clearly loves chess and he clearly sees Beth's potential. And the other thing is it also shows Beth's resilience in the fact that she doesn't like to give up easily.
So next we get a couple scenes with Elizabeth and her main friend there in the orphanage. What's her name?
Jolene.
And I think this is, we get a kind of like an understanding of how Elizabeth became the rebellious person we see in the first scene where growing up in an orphanage, you learn a lot from the other orphans.
Yeah. So I think this is where Jolene starts to tell her like, don't get addicted to the green pills when they're like out in the schoolyard.
Yeah. So they're having a conversation in the bathroom, I believe. And this is after earlier on, we get a flash that Jolene was getting disciplined because she called someone a cocksucker. So then Beth, being extremely naive growing up in an orphanage and obviously wasn't too exposed to the outside world, she didn't understand what that was. So Jolene had to kind of explain it to her. And this is after she had called Mr. Scheibel a cocksucker, not knowing what it meant. So obviously she's extremely upset about this because Mr. Scheibel then locks the door to the basement and Beth couldn't go down and play chess with her anymore. So this is kind of just, we're starting to see Beth's development as starting to learn about the real world a little bit more. And like Eric said, when you're in an orphanage, really the only exposure and information you can get is from the older orphans.
So next we get a montage of Elizabeth learning chess openings from Mr. Scheibel. We get the Queen's Gambit line that pops up. And then we're introduced to Mr. Gans, who is the president of the local chess club at the high school. And she schools him. She mates him quickly. She even tells him that she's going to mate him in three. And then she plays the Mr. Gans and Mr. Scheibel at the same time. She beats Mr. Gans blind. Mr. Gans kind of knows immediately that Elizabeth is something special.
Yeah, and the funny part with that too is, so Mr. Gans, this is when he brings her the doll, right? And she's like, what the hell is this? What am I supposed to do with this? I just chuckled at that. She drops it straight in the trash and she comes up the stairs. And I guess it's another one of those like Big was kind of saying. So chess is a man's game, man's world. And Mr. Gans, he doesn't really know what to do with Elizabeth. So he figures out there's a 9-year-old girl. So I'm going to bring her a doll. And she's like, screw that. I'm here to win. I'm here to play chess. So she drops that thing in the trash and she finds some chess books.
Right. I like that little nod that Mr. Scheibel did to like kind of prompt Elizabeth to just say thank you. And she kind of went with it, the kind of social intelligence to know that Mr. Gans could be an important part of her life. And so just say thank you and you can throw it out later.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought, Eric, going off what you said, I thought that this was kind of the final moment that was like, you know, Mr. Scheibel clearly is making an influence in Beth. And at this point in her life, she doesn't really have many close connections. And I think at this point, you know, she's 8 or 9 years old. And at this point, one of her best friends is, you know, an older aged janitor that plays chess in the basement. And I think we start to see how that might affect her ability to like maintain relationships and meet people in the future.
Next, we got Mr. Gans talking to the headmaster of the school, proposing to take Elizabeth to the chess club.
Yeah, so the interesting thing in this scene to me was just the fact that obviously you have a girl kind of secretly playing chess in the basement with the janitor, and the headmaster of the orphanage is at a little bit of a crossroads here because she has this, you know, finely dressed gentleman coming in from a chess club from a local school, and he's enamored with this young girl that's in the orphanage that she probably had not a single thought about the fact that she was playing chess in the basement. So now she's kind of in this awkward situation where she's like, oh, you've been playing chess with Mr. Scheibel in the basement, they tell me. And she doesn't want to necessarily discipline her there because she's also like, well, this is a good opportunity for Beth. I'm still going to send her or let her go to the high school with this foreign man that comes in. And she's a little skeptical at first, and that's when he introduces the idea of having a girl chaperone.
And this is where we get back to the green pills. And so the state cracks down, no more tranquilizers for kids, and Elizabeth starts to go through withdrawals. And so just before she's going off to the high school for the chess meeting, she doesn't have her pills. We get this like audio distortion where we can tell that Elizabeth will not be on her game, but her friend comes through, sneaks her some green pills just before she goes.
And man, she takes advantage of those green pills. She suckers everybody in there. That was fucking awesome.
Right. And yeah. In an hour, 20 minutes, she beats them all simultaneously. No problem for her.
She's awesome.
And so now, cut, final scene. She sneaks out of the movie that they're watching, and she's after those pills. There's a whole jar of those nice, tasty green pills. And so she sneaks down to the basement. She grabs the screwdriver and sneaks into the pharmacy that they got there. And she handfuls those pills right in her mouth.
At first, when you first see her breaking in, you're like, oh, all right, she's going to like grab a couple and stuff her pockets in and she'll get out of there. She'll go stash them at her bed or something. And then she just dives in like it's a bowl of M&Ms. It's literally like a little kid. If you watch them around like a party around your house and there's like a bowl of goldfish on the table, she just goes in, just fully claws it and shoves as many as she possibly can in her mouth and just starts chomping.
This was one of those scenes where I let out an, oh no, like why? Like you said, Big, I was hoping she would just take him, bring her back to her room and dominate chess and we'd have a nice story. But again, another foreshadowing here. She, I guess we kind of already knew this. She's probably an addict, especially with the behavior that we saw in the beginning with her in Paris. The other thing that kind of cued me into this too is, I don't know if you picked up on this, you guys, but she's always looking over when they're out at recess at the boys on the other side of the yard who are like smoking cigarettes. So you get that like, she's kind of into risky behavior type of thought. I don't know. Did you guys feel that?
Yeah, I think, Greg, that's just another sign that her sheltered, naive life, and she kind of sees different behavior going on that she's not accustomed to. So I think she's just enamored. She starts to get enamored with the outside at this point because, you know, it's an all-girl orphanage. She's not really familiar with, you know, the interactions between normal kids like a regular child would have growing up in like a regular school. So I think she's just in general enamored at that idea. And as far as the attic goes, I mean, we see it. This was, I'm trying to think of a word here. This was intentionally done by the orphanage here to kind of get these kids relying on the medicine that they were handing out so that they could control them. And they were not prepared for a situation where the state would come in and intervene and immediately have to cut these kids off. And if you're taking these kind of drugs regularly, it's not the type of thing that grown adults can even handle getting taken off of. You have to go through a process of weaning yourself off. So when they try to make these kids quit cold turkey, it's honestly surprising that we didn't see more kids kind of like acting out in the same type of ways that Beth was when she was getting desperate.
Yeah, well, and Beth was, she was using them unlike any other girl in the orphanage too.
This final scene was intense with the movie scene playing in the background, kind of like crescendoing, and Elizabeth slowly making her way to steal the pills, which ultimately ends in her overdosing. The whole school is, or the whole orphanage watches her fall off the chair. A crazy end to the first episode that definitely had me excited to watch the next.
It was so suspenseful too. And just the way that scene was done, like you said, with the dramatic music from the movie in the background and just like her slowly, like turn by turn, taking the screws out to unlock that door. It was, and like every single moment you thought like maybe someone was going to come in and catch her. And like ultimately at that point, I'm wrapped in. I'm rooting for her. I'm like, hell yeah, get in there. You get your handful.
No, no. I'm yeah. like, no, please stop. No, get
I'm,
out of
I'm
there.
Like, that's I don't want her to get caught. I'm like sitting on the edge of my seat. I'm like shaking. I'm nervous. And
I mean, I want her to get the green pills, but I don't want her to break in.
I didn't
at the same
want
time.
Her to take handfuls and start shoving them in her mouth like they were candy. But when she did that, my jaw dropped to the floor. And you knew what was coming next. It was not going to end well.
Right, I'm with you, Big. I was stressed out. I was like, hurry up, get those pills. Move a little bit quicker if you're going to
be stealing. Yeah, I was like, hurry up, get it in the pockets, and then get out of there.
So going forward, will you guys keep watching?
Already have, baby. I'm not kidding when I tell you guys, I had to fight my hand and the muscles in my hand to put the phone down so that I wouldn't do what Big did, which was binge 7 episodes and stay up till 5 in the morning watching them all. I knew if I did it, like, I'd be hooked, so I'm fighting still. I'm 3 episodes in right now. I fucking love it. I've been talking to everybody about it.
Yeah, so in general, this is one of those things where it's like you said at the beginning, Greg, where we randomly picked this movie or picked the series out of a list. And the amount of buzz about this show already is incredible. I mean, I was at a brewery up in Maine.
On the next episode of Binged, Hillbilly Elegy.